With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Podcasting world doesn't wait for anyone.
No.
And especially not you.
Why?
Well, because you were on your phone as I was about to.
You're always on your phone.
Look at your screen time. Why don't you get your screen time up?
No, my screen time, it flashed off this morning, said I was on my phone for an average of 10 hours a day.
There you go.
It's not true.
That is, so your phone's lying to you?
I literally didn't use my phone all weekend and then it came up with that.
Yeah, but you'll be on your phone all day, that means. I'm going to look at my screen time. Okay, your screen time last week, an average of, oh God, is this bad? Before I say this, what do we think is a bad screen time? Yeah, per day.
I think anything over like 7 hours is probably pretty bad. That's most of the working day.
Anything over 7 hours is bad? 7 hours, 22 minutes a day.
That's pretty much a person's full working day, isn't it?
That is shocking.
Mine said I was on there for 10 hours. It's not true though. Lying to me.
Kate, what's yours? Felipe, what's yours? Yours is two? Yeah. Not over seven? What am I doing? Felipe. Oh my God, I don't, okay, fine guys, you win. Mitt's at 10 hours. 10 hours a day.
It can't be right. I'm actually quite good on my phone these days. I don't use it.
10 hours a day. That is shocking.
I don't think I'm awake for 10 hours a day.
4 hours 30 last week. That's bad that we're spending that much time on our phones. This is why, if you're listening to this, you should listen to more podcasts. Listen to podcasts. Don't even look at your screens.
Just close that. Get it playing. Close the screen up.
Yeah. Hey, hello, everyone. Welcome back to a bonus episode of Private Paths. Me and your boy, Alex, here.
Private Path.
Yeah, Private Path.
If you didn't know, the Mercury is in retrograde.
It is. Damn straight is. So if you're freaking out,
which
you're not feeling yourself.
You're going to have a lack of communication skills. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're going to, come on.
Be all over the place.
That's exactly what it said.
Yeah, it's what I've been feeling recently.
This is what I mean. Communication is broken down.
Here, all right, I'm hungry, parts. Okay? I haven't eaten today. I haven't eaten today. I'm a little bit hungry.
You have, really?
No.
You haven't eaten today?
I have not eaten
You're
today.
You're looking quite sort of...
hench.
Like big.
Because yeah. I've been training, baby. Been training, baby.
Let's talk more about that. I'm interested in that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a Friday episode of Private Parts. Today, we have the wonderful Sarah Pascoe on the podcast.
Yeah.
She's a comedian, a mother, a friend, and one of the funniest... I think one of the funniest people I know. She is so funny. TV host. She does it all. She's a writer. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm just waiting for you to stop the list. It goes on and on.
If you had to say, if you had to give me a list, what would you say? I got to meet my friend, Jamie. He's a... What would you say?
Honestly, the first word that came to my head was wanker. I tried so hard for it not to be that, and it was. It's awful. It's just awful.
It comes into my mind.
I tried my best. I'd have to think about it and come back to you.
We had a great episode with Sarah Tate. Just really funny, talking about motherhood, talking about everything. Hopefully you really enjoyed the episode. Thank you also so much for tuning into our bonus episodes every single Wednesday. We love the fact that you love them. And please slide into our DMs at Private Podcast.
Tweet us.
Okay.
Tweet us now that Elon Musk's about to buy the platform.
Yeah, why don't you tweet us?
You can say what you want as well.
Has he made it free speech?
No, he's not actually bought it yet.
I thought he had.
Fanning around. No, there's some sort of debate over how many bots there are, so it's throwing the price off or something. I don't know.
Well, you know a little bit.
I don't do business like that.
Okay, baby. All right, everybody, enjoy the episode and just enjoy the episode. You ready for it?
Put your slippers on.
Yeah, lean back.
Crack open a can of whoop ass.
I was about to say whoop ass as well.
No way.
Yeah, a can of whoop ass.
We are just on sync. In sync.
In NSYNC.
NSYNC.
Here we go. All right, everybody, enjoy the episode with Sarah Pascoe on Private Pod.
I was thinking about cheese, you know.
What, you like cheese?
I love Emmental.
You like Emmental?
The one with the holes in.
Holy cheese, I used to call it as a kid. Great in a sandwich.
Yeah.
Emmental, what is Emmental?
Nutty.
It's nutty
flavour.
Almost nutty, yeah. But the holes in.
What do you mean nutty? There's no nutty cheese.
Yeah, it's sort of a nutty.
That's what they'd say.
You know, there's those some cheddars that have a crunch to them. Like when you've, there's almost like, and it like crunches in your mouth, but there isn't a crunch. But
I'm going to put it out. I'm not a big cheese person.
Really?
So are you a cheese person?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think when I went vegan, I was sort of dreaming about cheese. Everything else was quite easy to give up. Apparently it turns into something a bit like morphine in your system. You know, people say like, oh, chocolate's good for endorphins. Mm. Cheese is really kind of soporific.
There's no way that cheese turns to like an equivalent of morphine.
People who've never had morphine say it's very morphine-like. They've heard.
So cheese can be like morphine.
Well, that's why people find it addictive. Right. There's like a, obviously not actually, like they're ruining their lives for cheese. But
so they test for cheese in the Olympics, you reckon? See if they're dosed up on.
Yeah, they do. It's really serious.
Well, you can't eat cheese before you get running.
Apparently not.
Sometimes they just sniff them like. Red Leicester, get out of here.
They just put a mouse in the room.
I don't understand the obsession with cheese. I don't understand why
what do you like? Do you like wine? Do you like olives? Crackers?
Hummus.
Oh, I like hummus.
Chauvinism.
What's wrong with hummus?
Sport.
No, hummus is my go-to.
Mm.
You do like hummus?
I love hummus.
I've seen your balls covered in hummus, actually.
This is true.
Quite a weird way to start off the podcast.
Okay, so...
Ex-girlfriend?
No, this sounds weirder than it was. We were drunk.
We were into some pretty kinky stuff.
No, we were just drunk.
What a waste of hummus. Yeah,
no, it didn't go to waste.
Oh, God.
She licked it off.
She did not,
yes,
Alex.
She did. That's the bit I saw.
No, you did not see any of that.
I had front row seats to that.
No, you did not see any of that.
So is this where kink meets the very middle class?
Yeah. Oh, what are we going to rub on us? I'm going to get Tamara Slaughter tonight.
So you put it on yourself.
Yeah. No, I thought it would be funny when I was younger to get a pot of hummus.
Don't say younger. Well,
it was when I was younger.
How young?
You were 27.
Okay.
Still an adult.
It's not an adult. I was young.
You thought it would be funny.
Yeah. I thought it would be funny.
Was it funny?
Hilarious.
It was, actually.
It was. Everyone was laughing.
And this was like a dinner party situation.
After the dinner party, yeah.
Everyone's gone home. There's hummus left over.
Yeah, there's hummus left over. And I said, what can I do with that?
Can't find the lid.
Yeah. So just use my penis as a lid. And that would be funny.
Right.
And then what turns out is it's not that funny because then we talk about it years later on a podcast and it doesn't really work in the
but
same...
But someone did eat the hummus.
She licked the hummus off.
No, because she hates food waste.
She did. No.
Yeah. By the way, I found this out.
What?
Apparently when we clean out yogurt... Do you clean out yogurt pots? Do you clean out pots when you...
I'm very busy.
That's a really, really unique question.
But I also don't put my genitals in them. So it kind of
balances
out.
That's literally
out.
Like what a mass murderer asks you at a party before he kills everyone.
Okay, so what do you mean for recycling? Pots? You clean out your yogurt pots.
Yeah, you clean out your yogurt pots. Have you done that?
No.
Well, apparently. Okay, have you not? Do you not do that?
I don't do that either. I probably have at some stage.
But what, you clean them out?
Well, yeah, if I'm feeling that, oh God, I should.
So why is the
up.
Reason to clean them out? Because otherwise they can't be recycled.
Yeah, apparently.
Because so. I don't really believe they're actually recycling our rubbish.
Recycling is a lot worse.
They're not. Washing your yogurt pots?
Yeah, because this is what I found out the other day. Yeah. So my whole theory was that, okay, fine, you're recycling, it's great. Mm. So apparently it just doesn't ever get recycled.
No, it doesn't. If it's like mixed recycling, they're just burying it somewhere. And so I feel sorry for the people at the sinks wiping their yogurt pots clean and their baked bean cans.
Because it doesn't.
I guess no, just bury it in
you're
your own
foolish.
Garden.
You're idiots.
Yeah.
You're idiots.
So you've been lied to. They're not idiots. Yeah. They've been lied to.
You hadn't been lied to. You just guessed.
I was lazy.
Yeah. You were lazy and then used that as a.
Yeah. Yeah, and then was like, it all came up Pasconian. Saved all that time.
But apparently that's true. Apparently they send off the rubbish to places like Poland where exactly. they just try and get it burnt off and it doesn't do anything.
Or they bury it in places or drop it at sea and it's all terrible.
Yeah. And if the whole world, every single person in the world was recycled, everyone recycled and all businesses were recyclable and everyone used like ethical sort of means and all these different things. We'd only clear up 7% of the world's plastic.
Mm.
7%.
We're absolutely buggered.
We absolutely are.
Yeah. Fucked.
So do you try and do your things for the environment?
Here we go. I just had a baby and I think that's the worst thing you can do for the environment ever. You just like literally bring another consumer into the world.
They're how many really have you not offset your carbon emissions yet?
I haven't.
Can you do that with a baby?
You tell them they have to plant 5,000 trees because all the nappies you use.
Well, you tell the baby they have to. Well, right then
just
and there.
So, you're not going to school, you're going to tree planting.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to the woods. Well,
yeah, you're going
woods.
To Brazil, to the Amazon, you're going to say sorry first. No, and you can't fly there. I'm sorry.
You have to walk there.
Yeah, walk there or swim. And then you've got a lot of planting to do. And then maybe back in time for your GCSEs. Yeah, I've got all of the guilt, but I don't think I do anything constructive actually. And I hate all of those statistics about, oh, if you stopped doing this, like there's lots of stats about, you know, cows.
Yeah. Like, but I don't know any of these stats.
Cows are worse than flying.
It was like you're about to say something else and you couldn't quite, so you went flying.
Yeah. Do you know, you get halfway through a fact and go, this is hearsay at most, and I don't know any of the numbers.
No, the worst is when, I don't think you ever have this, but I had this a lot, is when you're at a dinner party and you're telling a story that you think's quite funny.
Mm.
And as you're getting
so
halfway
through.
I
got the hummus pot.
Yeah.
And then I took and my pants off. Yeah, okay, that happens.
And as you're getting towards the end of the story, you realize it's not going to be funny and other people have drifted off. So then you almost lie and you make up a punchline.
Well, that is stand-up comedy. That is what that is. It's like what you wish you'd said, what you'd wish you'd done.
Yeah.
You just kind of fudge it. I have the thing where I realize it isn't my story. Someone told it to me and sometimes they're there.
Oh, so you're halfway through telling it and then you look at them, you go, oh shit, this is yours.
I'm a terrible liar. Oh and God. I'll start the story and I'll have added some details, like some flourishes.
You've
and then halfway
it.
Through, I can see from their face and I'll be like, oh, Katie told this to me. She met Robbie Williams.
You just have to like wink at them or something, but like, come on, just let me go.
No, then I go, oh, that's exactly the same thing happened to me. How strange.
And then you also lie.
Yeah.
You keep lying through it. But is that what stand-up comedy is, you think, where you're the type of, comedians are the type of people who go, God, I wish I'd said that.
I think it's the part of your brain that fictionalizes to make it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And so it's a version of the truth that the really good comics, they say it very truthfully. So you feel like someone's telling exactly how they felt and exactly what happened.
I always find it tricky because as a comedian, you're always looking for content.
Yeah.
And that's tough. I've said this before. I said it to, I think, Phil Wang, who came on, and I said, everything's content all the time, which becomes chaotic because then when do you switch off and switch on?
Yeah.
Because you can't switch off and switch on.
You don't. And I also think it makes you quite a bad friend because other people are going through sort of, you know, a tragedy.
And you're looking at it as content.
Oh, this is juicy stuff.
So you're
oh, what a nightmare. And you walked in on him, did you? Oh, you're thinking, oh, this is great. And you do a thing, someone else will be talking. And again, it could be quite, and then you think, is there something in that? Is there something in that?
I think it was Lou Sanders, someone who said to us that she had as well friends content, and one of her friends had a one night stand with someone and he didn't take off his jacket.
Oh yeah, he wore a parka the whole way through or something ridiculous.
Oh no. Did he take off his clothes underneath the parka?
I think he just took his trousers off.
That's awful.
It's quite handy if you need to get out of there quick. Though.
Yeah.
You've got your jacket on, you can just run.
But also, depending on, like, if you're on top of someone who's wearing a coat, at least it's like on the bed underneath. But if they're on top of you, like, essentially you're wearing the coat as well.
Yeah, it's
for
quite
a lot
quite
of
hot,
it.
Quite stuffy.
Yeah.
Oh my God, speaking of sex, you just had a baby.
I just had a baby, but by IVF, not sex.
You had a IVF? Oh,
wow. IVF baby, yeah.
Oh my God, can we, so talk me through the whole thing.
Well, first of all, you have to be very sad and infertile. That's pretty much the bottom line.
Sad and infertile.
If you're happily infertile, you're punching the air, going, what a waste of condoms all this time. So you have to be sad about it. I found the whole process amazing. And I know that's because I'm from this sort of positive place at the end of it where it worked. Mm. The science of it is incredible. They're so good at it now. And so you take hormones, you get healthy. That's why I wasn't drinking. So you don't drink for months and you look at your diet and you take supplements and then you inject yourself. And I don't mind needles. So that bit was...
From your heroin days.
From my... I don't want to joke about taking heroin.
Oh God, what can we drink?
You gave me a bag of candy kittens when I got here. I don't want a bag of heroin when I leave.
Whatever you like, we have it. but it's amazing. Continue. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so then... they take eggs and your partner goes and masturbates if you're going with a partner. And then the amazing thing is they make embryos and then they judge sort of who's doing well and who's not doing well. And then you get to watch it go inside you. So it's not amazing, which I didn't know.
You get to watch.
You watch them put the embryo back inside you.
Right.
So on a screen,
oh
like
God.
A shooting star. And that, so actually...
It's like asteroids, like the old computer game or something.
Yeah, but with people.
That's crazy.
Real people inside. So it's not something that you're really separate from, which is what I had expected it to be like. It's clinical, but it's not without lots of emotion and magic, actually. I thought that bit was magic. My husband was there as well. And then... Yeah, I found out we were pregnant. And then because, you know, it's a healthy embryo, because I'm 40 and I've had a lost one. So there's all of these things that if you're trying to conceive naturally when you're older, you have a lot more worry. And then there was still lots of anxiety. And as I say, candy kittens were my...
Yeah, that's what I got addicted to.
You got addicted during pregnancy?
Just nailing candy kittens all the time.
Yeah, that was my craving.
Oh, wow.
Better
than the heroin.
but I had a very big baby. And they kept saying, have you got gestational diabetes? And I was like, I've been eating a lot of sweeties. So I'm not advising you.
How big is the baby? Was it?
Now, he's in the 99th percentile. He's really tall.
He's not like 6 foot, dude.
Yeah, he's 6 foot.
It's going to be great in Brazil when he's planting those trees.
That's right.
Is he very big?
Yeah.
So how many pounds was he when he came out?
Oh, pounds. Actually, he was only 9 pounds, but I had him early.
Is that quite big, 9 pounds?
It's bigger. Yeah, I think about 7.5. It's not massive. It's not like giant. It wasn't in the Guinness Book of Records,
Six
actually.
Pounds of it was candy kittens.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. I had no clue about this, you know, especially with things like, firstly, when you have to get pregnant, I always think
And
this,
you do have to.
Yeah.
The Pope says.
Yeah. It's what you do, right? You have to do it, right? But it's one of the only scenarios when you want to get pregnant is that you go from being told to never get pregnant because it's bad. So use protection, use whatever you can, don't whatever it is, to suddenly going, well, now get pregnant.
Yeah.
There's no in-between process. And still, in our current climate, especially with you know, the advancement of medicine and things like that, we're still not told whether or not we're fertile.
Yeah.
There's no process.
Yeah, my husband has got a big problem with that. Like his sex education at school, he said they never, because they were so desperate for us not to get anyone pregnant, there was never any conversation about any other scenario. So they don't talk about homosexuality. They don't talk about all of the things you can do that don't get people pregnant. And they don't talk about that some people, it's not that simple. It's not going to be this thing that happens straight away because they don't want you to know that.
But why don't they want you to know that? Because
I don't know. Or maybe they don't think it's their responsibility to talk about it.
But it's such a responsibility of teachers and adults and parents and things like that. Because do you know, and you probably went through the same things. I remember speaking for you. Is that, so my fiancés.
Do you like the word fiancé?
No, I hate it.
Oh, do you?
I don't like it.
Because you did really cringe. I thought, do you hate her or the word?
Yeah. I hate
it's,
it.
It's mixed.
Yeah, it's a real mixed emotion, especially at the moment. But yeah, fiancé is a weird term. But her sister has frozen her ex. And she went through this whole process of it and it was really intense and they managed to get a couple eggs and it's okay. But she said, and I have other friends who are in their 30s trying to have a baby, and they said, if only I was told earlier, if I had checked earlier, if all these things had happened earlier. Right.
It's
so then
really
we went to the sperm bank and did it.
Did you?
Yeah, I did it.
Wait, you've frozen your sperm?
No, I went to the sperm bank. I went and wanked in a cup.
So you got embryos?
Well, I didn't. I got rid of the cup.
You wanked out some embryos.
Yeah, no.
Did they want you to go in the clinic? Is this hummus all over again?
Yeah. Just went into a room and wanked.
He didn't have an appointment. he just turned up.
Just up a building.
Started wanking in the reception. Yeah. I'm like, get out.
No, it's the weirdest thing.
What did you do? So you've frozen your sperm?
No, I didn't freeze anything. I went and checked it.
Oh, I see.
Sorry.
Have I not explained that? I just talked about wanking in a cup.
Yeah. So sperm bank. So you went and had your sperm looked at.
Yeah.
I see.
How is it?
Have I not told you this?
No.
I'm sure I've spoken about
this.
Oh my God. So it's the weirdest scenario. You go to this place, wherever it is. There's loads of them, I'm sure.
So Harley Street, was it?
I was not Harley Street. I was East London.
Okay.
I was very edgy.
Why have you gone to East London?
Because I wanted my sperm to be edgy.
Yeah.
Wherever you wank, that's what it comes. Anyway, you walk in there and there's a receptionist, and the receptionist knows why you're there. So you're sort of, it's quite a weird story. Name and you're going Jamie Lang and things like that, and I'm thinking, well, you know why I'm here, and it's to masturbate into a cup, and they know that as well. Yeah. So it's a weird sort of.
But also, I think they're also very over it. Like it's the first time apart from the hummus, time you've masturbated into a little plastic cup. But
no, I've done that a few times.
Have you?
Yeah. It was a similar sentiment when we used to go clubbing. I think girls knew why you were there. It was to take them home and masturbate into a cup, show them what you're capable of.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so do you think the first day that they sit there as a receptionist, they're going,
I used to, when I was temping, I years ago worked on a sexual health clinic just off Tottenham Court Road. Mm. And so I used to have to make people's follow-up appointments when they'd got results. Oh, and God. I did find it, and I never really got over it actually.
Wait, when an STD clinic?
That's got a slightly different.
No.
Yeah, because it's Tottenham Court Road, it was often people who were travelling. And because of the NHS, which is fantastic, it means that people can have their sexual health checks here. So they wouldn't do it in a country where it would cost them lots of money. They would do it when they were here and get their medicine for free, which is, I think, brilliant.
Yeah, that's a great way.
Yeah, the less stuff that's floating around, the better for all of us.
Yeah. So were some patients who came in very different when they walked out? Some of them would have been, because that would have happened all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God.
Especially if they'd come in a couple and then one of them finds out, like, oh, that's why you brought me here.
Oh, oh God. My God.
Yeah.
It's bad. So anyway, what you do is you go and then you get taken to a room and you get taken to this room and you sit in this room.
What's the room?
Do they give you materials?
Yeah, they do. They give you like 80s porn.
Yes. It's either that or you get a laminated iPad, which is what my husband got.
What?
That so is the not, worst I, image I have ever.
Isn't it grim? So rather than having the very old-fashioned magazines, they're obviously like getting with the times, but it's covered in plastic, so they've like wiped it.
That is the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. Yeah. They have a laminated iPad.
Then, you can then access whatever material you want through the iPad. Okay, got you. Yeah.
They have a laminated iPad. You would expect these rooms to be a little more sexy. Like you want to walk in there, maybe music's playing.
But then they'd never get rid of the blokes.
I was going to say, people are going to hang around.
I can go again.
Yeah.
But there's something weirdly sexy about it. Like you've never. You know when you're going to have sex and you're like, oh, this is quite exciting.
Yay!
Don't know why I was clapping. Very childlike. Yeah. You're going to have sex. It's quite exciting. It's like at the moment you're like, oh, this is exciting. It's the same thing when you're going to one of these sperm clinics, because you get taken to the room and it's like you're being led to this chamber. And then you open up the door and there's just a chair sitting in there and there's a TV on the wall and you can watch 80s porn. It's sort of the only place where you go, well, this is the only place I can really watch porn without feeling bad about it.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, it's medical.
It's medical. So you then do whatever you need to do. You then put your... And when you finish whatever you need to do, you never run out of somewhere so quick. Because it's so embarrassing. You put it in there and you almost feel like immediate regret.
But you don't see anyone on the way out, do you?
No, you don't see anyone. I thought I was going to.
They don't come back for you.
Yeah.
You're able to scuttle away.
Yeah, but I didn't realise that. I was like pressing the lift. Like, hurry up.
You should be quite good at that. You've had years of practice. Of
scuttling away.
Shooting your load and then running away.
And then, but then the results. That's what we need to know.
Oh, so then the...
little Jamie Lang.
Here we go. Yeah, a lot of drum rolls. So I got a call. They went, hello. And I went, hello. And they went, this is Dr. Everett. And I went, hello, Dr. Everett. And they said, your results are back. And I said, well, what is it? And they said, I would like to give you an A star.
Oh.
But you got good.
You're meant to have a minimum of, for men, it's a minimum of 40 million sperm. Mm-hmm. That's what you're meant to have. That's like the sort of lowest mark that you sort of in terms of having a healthy amount. I had 320 million.
Amazing.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, you got fucking loads.
I got loads of them. I got loads of them.
Powerful. Well done.
Yeah. But Sophie, she had hers checked, and I think hers were a bit more complicated. But for women, typically, it seems a little bit more complicated.
But it is, and also, I mean, they can't tell you with sperm, they can look through a microscope and absolutely go, they're swimming the wrong way, they've got no heads. Give you
it says a lot about the different sexes. We're a lot more straightforward.
Yes.
Whereas women.
Which is why men are better. I don't know why people keep denying it.
Yeah, thank God we got round to it in the end. Yeah. This is what we were trying to get to.
Whereas with a woman, what they can do is they can tell you things like how many follicles you've got or the lining or this needs to happen. But it's a very inexact, I think it's more of an inexact science, because all you need is to ovulate a healthy ovum at the right time in your cycle when you've had unprotected sex, and you're going to have a healthy baby, hopefully. So.
But again, one of those things for you, it goes back to the same thing. That's sort of interesting content, right, for yourself. Because even though it's a sort of anxiety-driven experience and it's full of lots of ups and downs and things like that, it's sort of, it's like content, which is a weird sort of juxtaposition.
Yeah, it is. But what I would say is what's difficult about people finding out those things before they're with the person that they want to have a family with is, would you want it hanging over you? Like, would you want someone to tell you at 22, oh, by the way, you're infertile or you're going to find this difficult? I've got like PCOS.
That's so
and
true.
Lots of people then think as a teenager, I'm not going to be able to have a family, or they meet someone on a date and they're talking about that stuff too early because they're not able to just find out what happens over years. They have to say, oh, by the way, I'm 34. I don't have many eggs.
So I never thought of that.
Do you not?
That is totally, the pressure it absolutely.
And also in terms of life decisions, you want everyone to flourish and concentrate on their jobs and try different jobs if they hate that job. You don't want them thinking, I don't have any time.
Mm. Wow. So then you're stuck in a place where you don't really know what to do.
And it might make you unhappy when you don't need to be, because it might all be fine.
Yeah. It's like one of those things which is, would you rather be told when you die or how you die?
Mm.
That is the kind of same scenario. It's like, what do you pick? What do you pick?
Yeah, I don't know. I always love that thing about how every year you live through the date of your death, but you don't know.
Oh my God.
Every year.
Yeah.
It could be today.
But it's so true. Yeah. I also, which I didn't realize, and you said this before, but I didn't realize the amount of women that have miscarriages.
Yeah.
It's something like one in three.
Yeah, it's a lot. And it's such a, when it happened to me, it was just so horrendously awful because we've been trying to get pregnant for ages. Mm. And I actually didn't find the commonality of it any consolation. Because people going, oh, you know, it's so common. And I was like, other people, I don't care about anyone else's. Yeah, yeah. I really, really care about mine. Yeah. But what I think is fantastic, even you bringing it up, the fact is that you do know it. Like, there isn't a new word in your mouth. You know when it's happened to friends or... Mm. So I do think hopefully what there is just no secrecy about it. And also that thing about people not being able to talk to people about their pregnancy early on in case it happens, which is such a backwards thing.
But I think...
A lot of people don't talk about it in
until
case
12
it...
weeks.
Yeah, you're not meant to.
Yeah, we're not meant to. People really do think it's like a rule. And after 12 weeks, you get a scan and then you start letting people in.
Right, okay.
Which means that if you do have a miscarriage, you're essentially going to work, traveling everywhere with all of this pain and very few people to talk to. And the same for with heterosexual people, same for men. Like, I think they go through so much.
Yeah, I think so. Well. I think it's probably, I haven't obviously touched wood on it. That hasn't happened, but I think it's, I think for, I'm guessing for a woman though, because that's something inside of you. Right. And also from experience from other people who've been telling me, and like, Elizabeth Day, she talks about it, how she had it in the bathroom.
Yeah.
She had it in the bathroom and she was embarrassed.
Yeah.
She had a miscarriage.
It was in Fleabag, actually.
Yeah, so Elizabeth Day's podcast, How to Fail, when she interviews Phoebe Waller-Bridge, there's this really exceptional conversation about how Phoebe had borrowed Elizabeth's miscarriage. Mm. And essentially, Elizabeth had been interviewing someone, and when she'd gone to the bathroom, she started bleeding.
Right.
And then she'd gone back and carried on with the interview because she was too embarrassed. I don't know if that was the word she used, but essentially she didn't know how to, so she was just professional, carried on. And that really struck Phoebe, and then she kind of borrowed it and put it into the second series of Fleabag with the sister character.
Yeah. Which is insane that actually what happens is a huge amount of women, and men probably, but women, because they have to experience it, there's a sense of almost shame or embarrassment or like, oh God, this has happened. I don't really want to tell anyone. Don't want to make a fuss. And you continue. That's wild.
I think it's also, I would say it's quite a shock. So actually there are situations where you don't deal with it at the time.
Mm.
Like you kind of cope for a bit. And then afterwards you go, isn't that odd that I went into that numb place and
it's
carried
kind
on?
It's like mourning. You're mourning a loss almost. And a lot of people, when they go through mourning, they don't deal with it.
Absolutely, especially not...
They delay it, so I imagine that's probably what happens.
And they keep going, actually, I feel fine. Yeah. I feel fine that daddy's dead.
And then 6 months later,
yeah,
they're
good,
like,
okay.
Turns out I'm not fine.
Yeah. That I've is got literally a friend like that at the moment who is grieving, but hasn't started the grieving bit. Like, I'm just doing loads of admin. It's just lots of admin. That's all that death
you're
is,
like,
isn't it?
Oh, God.
Okay.
That is what happens. You go to this sort of manic stage, I think. But not to really pry, but I suppose that's private parts, is...
I think this is a perfect sex education podcast. I think that's what... Less cheese. More sex education.
This is what we need, right?
Yeah.
But it's very easy, right, when you say something like that to what could normally happen, especially from men, is that you go, okay, we don't really know what to say here, so let's not talk about it. But actually, the important thing is to talk about it, because I think actually a lot of the time people... get embarrassed that they've asked the wrong question or said something. But actually it's interesting to know these things because it should be wider known that this happens a huge amount and how upsetting it is.
I think about all human experiences, Jamie, we sometimes feel like, oh, I'm not qualified to ask because I don't know. And I think a well-meaning, well-intentioned question, and then someone can either say, I don't want to talk about it, or, you don't understand this. I feel like that's the thing, is that quite often when we're worried, we shut things down. It's very British, and let's not talk about anything emotional. Like, it's so clear when someone's asking a question because they genuinely care and are interested that you couldn't be offended or upset.
Yeah, but then also we're living in this time, which we're going to get to, is a time of like cancellation, things like that. So then you start to go, oh God, what can I say? Or what can't I say?
Do you worry about that?
No, I don't care. Do you heroin. Ever-
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever, when you record your podcast, do you ever afterwards think like, oh, I made that joke?
You do sometimes.
Do you?
Well,
I don't ever.
That's not true.
When do I? Well, when the last time I get?
Bit.
Nah, I'm not really. Because I think that actually people think that I'm harmless. Like, so people know that I'm not out there making sort of really heavy political views about stuff or saying things which I truly believe. I'm more questioning things,
what's
right?
Yeah. So, what's the saying, Wolf? In sheep's clothing or something.
You think that's who I am,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I think more the question is when you had the miscarriage, how did that emotionally make you feel?
I mean, I was absolutely destroyed.
Really?
I'm bringing it up now. It was sort of just over a year ago.
Yeah.
And then we got pregnant a couple of months later. But I was absolutely destroyed. And even I look at photographs of me at the time, or like because of work, sometimes I'm being filmed and I can just see how sad I am in my eyes.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought I was never going to be okay again.
Oh.
And so even in answering that question, I do feel okay again.
Yeah.
But also I'm really wary of the narrative of because I had a baby. And it's not that, because I know that there's this thing of like, oh, we lost one, but then we got one, or we did IVF because we were lucky enough to have resources and to do that. But yeah, I really thought I was never going to be okay.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's the thing about commonality. Like for me, it was like, oh, that was the end of my universe. Because because it had taken us so long, what I didn't realize and what's so unfair is when you have like this miracle, like when so we were about to start IVF when I got pregnant naturally. So we were waiting. You have to start, you start it when you start your period. So you're waiting for a period, didn't happen. Waiting for a period, didn't happen. It was like 35 days. And our nurse said, "Oh, have you done a pregnancy test?" And so I did one. And then it was like that whole day, we couldn't even say the words to each other because this magic thing had happened and we'd got pregnant naturally. So the start of it was so, oh my God, the miracle. And because it was a miracle, I was like, this person just wanted to exist.
Yeah.
And look how long we waited for them. So then when I started bleeding, it was like, no. Like, this is not the narrative. You don't have a miracle to have it taken away. And then I was really worried at the hospital that they would be really callous, that I thought, because these nurses see it all the time, and just because it's the end of my universe, and actually they were so kind. They were so kind because they said, if you've been trying for, they basically said, if you're an old woman who's been trying for years and years, it's heartbreaking. So they allowed me to be heartbroken.
You call yourself an old woman. No,
in terms of fertility, that's what I definitely felt like. And I felt like I deserved it. And that actually what? I had all of that guilt because.
But why?
Because if I'd had kids at 30, maybe I wouldn't have had a miscarriage, but I wasn't in love at 30.
Yeah,
and also
so
I didn't want children in my early 30s. I'm one of those people who went from, I definitely don't want kids.
Yeah.
Maybe I do want kids, I don't know. When I was 35, I was suddenly like, oh my God, life is so long. Like, what do you do if you're not making packed lunches? Yeah.
It is. Life is.
Everyone's like, it's so short. And then you get to like 36 or 37, like, oh my God, I'm so bored. I've done everything.
Yeah. It's fucking long.
Yeah, really long. No one's
really
tells
long.
You. And then I suddenly started thinking about like generativity and being part of a community and wanting to, of the different values I had to my life. So then I was in this phase, and then I met my husband, who's much younger than me and definitely wanted children.
How much younger?
I think 6 or 7 years, 7 years there younger. Yeah, here we go.
Here we go.
So I met my young husband and...
Does he wear a jacket?
Keeps it on.
He always keeps his
clothes on. Only takes off his socks. I think that
This is where you were going wrong. This is why you struggled for so many
years. Why didn't
no one
at the clinic ask does your husband keep all his clothes on?
If only you knew.
Yeah, that's why his sperm count was so low, is because he was trying to get them through denim.
Yeah, yeah. Which it was actually impressive that he managed to get any
at all.
Yeah. Majority is quite a hard fabric.
Yeah. Sorry, we did your sperm test and they're all wearing parkas.
Yeah. You should really think about changing your jeans because they're very strange, crusty white.
That was the line. The joke stopped being fun. Okay, now you're cancelled. Now I see why you're worried.
I knew it would be the jeans. Oh.
Yeah. But so it's true. So you then feel this guilt because you're thinking, well, if only this had happened earlier, then I wouldn't be in this situation.
Yes.
And you'll feel a sense of, I don't know what it would be, but towards your partner, you feel like, I'm sorry that this is now, you feel a sense
it's definitely a joint experience.
Yeah.
And I think...
You blame yourself, right?
Yeah, rather so in heterosexual couples, I think what probably happens is the man feels, oh, I'm not allowed any emotions because it's her body. And then she feels, I couldn't give you something you were so desperate for. So I think I think hopefully, or like with all sad things, you want to communicate and it to bring you closer together rather than
I definitely feel like with men, there is this weird like paternal thing that happens. And then suddenly when the baby's gone, it really fucks with their heads as well. But you're so right about like them not allowed to necessarily feel that because it's not in them type thing.
Or they have to put it away to wait. Me and my husband both have,
you lock it up. Lock
have
it
therapy.
Up. Yeah.
And something my therapist brought up after months and months after the miscarriage was she said that she felt my husband was waiting until there was space and then he would be able to do his grieving because he had to be so...
Gotta be strong.
Empathetic and strong and considerate to me. So it's almost like we both did my phase and then it was like waiting for his time to go.
Watching the clock.
Yeah.
Hurry up. Are you okay today?
She seems pretty chirpy.
Yeah. Okay, fine. I'm gonna start drinking.
But it's true. And I think that I think it's very brave to talk about those things as well, because it's such a personal experience.
Yeah, but to come back to the original thing about the comic, the comedians, people like me and Phil Wang and Lucy Sanders who do talk about our lives, there's also a wiring that makes you want to share everything. And not everything is suitable for jokes, But you do still have a little thing of like, okay, attention. Let me tell you about my worst day.
Yeah, but that's true. But that also must be very therapeutic, because you can get to go on stage and you talk about things that make you feel better, that you get off your chest. And also you make it in a funny way. And as we know, humor is the greatest medicine out there. So actually then you turn what is a terrible situation and not into a better situation.
I've never tried morphine.
Yeah.
Oh, that stuff is good.
But it's true. Yeah. You know, it's either that or what, you go and start drinking. And that's what a lot of people do, right? You have to like get it out of you somehow.
It's beautifully communal. So comedy in general, whether you're talking about, oh, using a little machine at Tesco or something deeply personal, what you feel in laughter is like absolute recognition. Like, ah, we understand the emotions you're talking about. We have the same human experiences.
You've just connected with a human, right? And you're getting an actual physical response back.
And so it's great. And connection is exactly what it is when it works. The laughter is like, we're with you.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
But I think
the lack of
laughter is painful. Try again.
But then when you're on stage and you start talking about, let's say, a miscarriage, something like that, which is typically not a funny subject.
Yeah.
And the audience then are thinking, well, I'm here to laugh.
Yeah.
And so you, because, and also we know in comedy, right, the punchline is the thing that you're not expecting almost, right?
Yeah,
that's the point of sort of comedy in a sense. But when you're making a joke about your own self and it's to do with miscarriage or whatever it is, or divorce or whatever, you know, breaking up, whatever it is, there's a sense of like, God, are we laughing? Is this the right place to laugh? So you have to force that laugh over the edge.
Well, I actually think the key is that you can only talk about those very sad things once you're okay, because what you know is when someone's not okay and it's not funny. So laughter in general is, it's fine. We're all fine now. Mm. This is, we laugh because we know you're okay. So when you're actually still in it and it's still raw, there's not that much laughing. And I've seen comics come out when something big's going on, can be divorce or bereavement or something. Yeah. And they come out and talk about it when they're not. And the audience literally just go, I need you to be okay.
Oh, so they curl up, they sense it.
It's the same with, it's the same with heckling and stuff. You heckle and actually looks like they can take it. You don't heckle someone who's having the worst gig of their life, usually.
Really?
Yeah, they heckle people who seem like they can handle it because it's too uncomfortable to watch someone having a terrible time.
That's such a sort of psychological way of the audience knowing that.
They might be very quiet. When you're very new at comedy, no one heckles you and you think it's because you're amazing. And then you realize it's because
you're shit.
You would have fallen over. you were so bad. No one thought this is going to be fun repartee.
they didn't need to heckle you.
No, they didn't need to.
It's like killing it yourself, like killing in cold blood. It's like literally just going, well, now I'm going to heckle him. It's not even funny.
And it's just like, oh God, that person so needs this to go well. And it clearly isn't going well.
It's like hunting a baby deer. It's like, you can't do it.
And you wait until someone's like, hey, how you all doing? And it's like, I'm going to take that person down.
Why is it that though? Why, when you have confidence on stage, do people go, right, I'm going to try and take that person
down? Most people don't. I just guess then it seems like, well, this is fair play. You've come out here and said you're going to entertain me. I'm not entertained. Let me tell you.
You might, as a comic, you must just really understand the psyche of individuals. Because you know what makes people laugh, right? Mm-hmm. And you know what makes people not laugh. So therefore you understand what people are like because you understand what triggers they have. And that's weird. So then when you can read body language and understand someone so well.
You definitely get obsessed with it.
Yeah.
But what's obsessing is that it's always different. So like an audience is not the same, doesn't have the same qualities. But Stuart Lee had an amazing routine of several years ago about inconsistency and about how your best bit when it doesn't work because the audience is different.
Right.
So it's your best joke. It's your best writing. You've performed it to the best of your ability, but they just, for other reasons to do with them or the room or things that have happened, or maybe you stumbled and didn't realize, it's that's obsessing. That you could be quite good at your job and then terrible at your job the next night.
Why does that happen? I've said this on the podcast before. I did stand up. And,
did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh,
it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, don't worry.
You didn't hear.
You didn't hear, right?
That's so mad.
Where did you do stand up? So, when you were already successful or before?
When I was doing Chelsea and things like that. And I did it at the Comedy Store.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I don't think they
liked
that.
Were they nice to you?
No. The audience were very nice.
Okay.
In the first one.
Yeah.
And I thought I was king of comedy.
Amazing feeling.
Oh my, I walked up and went, pfft.
Yeah.
Should have been doing this for years.
Yeah. It's an amazing feeling.
But then the second time, I said this before, when you lose the room,
Yeah.
I lost the room.
Awful.
And I didn't realize losing the room was a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it actually is a... You see people... You know when you're so embarrassed, your feet curl. Mm-mm. You do that and your shoes go. You can see people doing that. And you're like, oh my God, this is terrible.
Yeah.
But, and also, it happens a lot. And the only difference is you don't have any of the tools, because it's happened to you hundreds of times, to try and go, well, this is... I mean, because you have to acknowledge that situation and you have to show fearlessness. Mm. You would have been scared. So you lose them. And rather than going, I've lost hundreds of rooms and then had standing ovations after winning them back, I'm not scared of this. Instead, you go, I've lost them. They've gone forever. And I have to carry on.
I pretend to take like a fake phone call.
Mate, you think on stage, you think, how can I get out of this?
And you hear your own voice and you're talking, but also in your head.
Yeah,
so the two
things
happen, imagine. You go, I'm actually insane. How is this still going?
There's a louder voice in my head saying, run.
It actually is true.
Oh, it's awful.
It's like, you hear your voice and then you hear an echo, but it's not the echo that's in your head. Your head is going, this is fucking shit. This is shit. Get out of here. Yeah.
And then you meet eyes with someone who goes, oh, no, doesn't want to meet eyes. With you, like, don't look at me, and you're like, why? I thought that was a nice lady.
it's literal hell. Sounds like hell.
You're on stage in the center of the dent, you're center of the dungeon, and you're also the plague.
Yeah, and
no one wants to look at
sometimes
you.
Sometimes you're waiting for someone to go, this is so fucking shit. You're trying to work out what you would say in response to them going, this is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Like, I think that's actually what hell would be, having to relive that every night.
But I told you the moment that I told a joke and someone didn't hear it, so they told me to redo the punchline. And they weren't even heckling, they just wanted to hear it.
Oh, really? Well, that's
they went,
quite
can you
nice.
Do it again? And I went, oh.
So this wasn't like the film, this is just genuinely an audience member. Have another run at that.
Yeah, it might hit the second time.
Come yeah.
On. It definitely didn't.
The thing is, in your absolute defense here, because people say, well, stand-up's really scary, and they think of something like that, you doing a proper long set at the Comedy Store, which is the biggest and most important club on the circuit. Mm-hmm. So, but really how stand-up starts is very, very privately. You do very small gigs with a little pad, and you do very short amounts of time. So by the time you get to that gig, you've got hundreds of gigs of practice. You don't get thrown in there like that. Even with the 5-minute tryout at the Comedy Store at the weekend, someone will have done 150 gigs before they get there.
Get to do that.
So they will have experience with certain things.
It's so true though.
Whereas you and it's so unfair, that setup.
No, it's so true what you said there is, when that happens, they've gone. they've all gone. And with you, you're going, well, they've gone, but I can get them back somehow. Yeah. So you're trained into doing it. So just quickly before we end part one, I do want to know, you said that you never, and just because of the private watch talk, you said that you never thought that you could be yourself again, you could find it again.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's really profound, because I think a lot of people who go through similar experiences or other experiences, and I think everyone speaking here today have been through certain scenarios, right? But you do find yourself, and when you're in that scenario, your brain is working so backwards against you that you really feel you can never get out of it.
Yeah.
And that's a really scary place to be in, because you just think that you can never find happiness.
Yeah. I actually started stand-up when I, from a breakup. And you know, you have breakups, then you have big breakups.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've both had one where, you know, I was sort of, you know, crying on the kitchen floor, kind of.
Yeah. It's when you're heaving.
Classic.
Yeah, yeah. Don't want to eat ever again. And you do just think that was it. And and it's a pain, like a real physical pain. No, and you're so miserable. You're so miserable. People go, you look well.
You're like, yeah, you're like, what? Fuck off.
Dead. I don't have any organs. And it's such a raw thing. So it's not about like that bit. Mm. I don't think there's any, you can't find a positive and you shouldn't. And I think that pain is just like happiness. It's another emotion and you do have to live through it. I think what can happen, I'm using that example because it's such a healable pain, which I wouldn't want to say about anything else. But there then comes this like quite juicy bit after a breakup where it's slightly less raw, where you get lots of energy. You might write a poem. you might.
Calm down.
Yeah.
But you sort of think, oh, I'm going to join an evening class, or I'm going to go
poem.
To a gallery.
Like, sorry.
that's not historically.
I might write it. So you have a bit of energy, so you go, I can write
a poem.
Go to an evening class.
When you've had a rejection and you're single and heartbroken, so you're not like looking for anyone else, that can be quite a creative time. That's
what I mean. It's an empowering moment. You're like, okay, I'm in a movie right now.
Yes, and or you might book tickets for things. You just you start thinking about life again.
You're exploring things other than chasing someone else, essentially.
Yeah, and there's a space left in your life.
You were just
what good comedians do is they acknowledge it and they make it really funny. I used to say it on stage for that very situation. If I lost the audience, I'd go, I know you're not having a good time now. And you know you're not having a good time now. We all know. And I said, but it's, I said, yes, it's comedy's like sex. That if neither of us are enjoying it, we should just stop. Just maybe finish ourselves off at home, watch a Lee Evans DVD. but you don't, but you carry on. Because it's more embarrassing to go, you're not into this. And especially with sex, like it's so just awful that you just go, well, maybe they don't know how badly this is going.
I had that in sex once with someone.
This must have been pre-30.
I know, pre-30.
Jay has this saying where you've got to
make... Yeah, men don't get good at sex until they're 27. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Men don't.
Post 30, you said.
No, pre-27, men aren't good at sex.
So what makes men good at sex then?
When they're not selfish.
Okay. And you think that stops?
I think it stops to 26, 27.
Yeah. No, I think it's very dangerous to extrapolate to an entire gender.
Yeah, no, I'm generalizing.
So you in your late 20s started to realize, oh, there's someone else here sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, there's someone else. But I had sex with someone and I must have been about 19, 20. And it wasn't in 1920, but it sounded like it. Yeah, in 1920, we were having sex and it was at the end of a sort of party. And we were sort of hooking up and then having sex on the sofa. And the lights were so bright in the room.
Where were you? Were you in the clinic?
In the sitting room. And we just, it was so awkward, the whole thing. And we just both continued. And it was the most horrendous thing
in
the world.
That's what bad stand-up's like. You're doing your best moves that you've practiced before and they've always worked. And you're just getting this awkward response to it and you're like, I only know other moves like this.
There's no way this is gonna get any better. If you're not liking it, because I did say, I said in my first stand-up that one of the jokes was, and I didn't say this in my second one, but I said doing stand-up for the first time is like having sex for the first time. I know I'm gonna enjoy it, you're not, but I know that I am. And that one,
that's a very funny observation.
A funny observation, because I know that it's going to be okay for me. You're probably not going to enjoy this. And that made them
but
feel more
comfortable.
But it shows
confidence, is what I mean. So the acknowledgement of you're going to have a terrible time makes them think, oh, I'm actually quite enjoying that.
Wow.
So it brings down the expectation.
You're going, I'm terrible at this. Don't worry. I'm not scared. And they go, great. It's all great fun.
Because you're allowing them to come in.
Because you're not going, hi, my name's Jamie Lang. If this doesn't go well, I'm going to hurt myself.
Yeah. You laugh.
Nothing rides on this. Like, this isn't my job. Like, I don't need this, like, gig money. Like, and then they go, oh, fantastic. It doesn't matter.
It's so true. But okay, just before we said then part one, but you're happy and okay now.
Yes, thank you for checking at the end of the half.
Let's get all the good bits. All right, everyone. We're going to stop there for part one. We'll see you in part two, everybody. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.